So Tony told you that our session this whole weekend is going to be on mapping the left. I almost think we might want to call it tracking and defeating evil, because that's what it is. The activists on the left and the people who fund them are out to destroy everything you hold dear. Your families, marriage, your businesses, your freedom of speech, your freedom of religion, everything. And if you don't think that's evil, let me just give you a few examples to reflect on. How evil is it that unborn children are still being murdered in the United States of America? Oh, they don't call it murder because it's legal. How evil is it that a five-year-old kindergartner will be paraded out in front of a class, a little boy who's been told by the left that he can become a girl, and announces at 5 years old that he's a girl, and the classroom does a celebration for him? How evil is it that another five-year-old little girl in that school sees her friend that she knew as a boy for a whole year, calls him by the name he was given at birth, and was sent to the principal's office and punished for using the wrong gender? How evil is it that we are denying God and his creation plan, male and female, he makes us? How evil is it that bakers and photographers and people of all small businesses can no longer decide how they want to run their businesses, that they're being punished because they believe in God's design for marriage? How evil is it that on college campuses across the country, freedom of speech is being stifled, that an American leftist agenda that teaches children and adults and college students that they're nothing more than primordial slime that evolved into something else, and by golly, they're lucky to be here because they could have been aborted and that would have been okay too. How evil is it that, as Steve Bannon told us last night at the Gold Circle meeting, half of Americans don't have $400 in cash at their disposal? How evil is it that ISIS is among us, that their ideology in many cases is being forced upon us? How evil is it that our churches are still being silenced? Ladies and gentlemen, this is not a battle about the right and the left and what kind of politics you have. This is a battle of evil and good. And we have an entire generation now that the public schools have been turned over to the leftists years ago. In fact, two generations, about 40 years, of people that were not taught truth, were not taught about our nation's history, and that this nation was created in a purposeful fashion so that we could be free to worship God as we feel called to, and to strive to be all that we can. And 4% of young adults today hold a Christian worldview and an understanding of a biblical worldview or a Judeo worldview. 4%. There's something else that God hates in addition to lies that he will not put up with for very long, and that is apathy. God says he will spew you out of his mouth if you're lukewarm. everybody in CNP is here because you're a warrior of some sort of another. And we have to be agents of change and agents of saving this nation. And we've got to arm ourselves in how to fight evil effectively. And that's what this weekend is about. And so I encourage you to attend every session, every workshop. Learn all you can, and don't go home and say you went to another nice conference. Go home and become a warrior like you've never been before. And sometimes God equips us with people from the inside who've come from a place of darkness that can give us truth. And our first speaker today is one such person. David Horowitz, if you could go ahead and be making your way up to the stage as I introduce you, I would really appreciate that. David Horowitz came from the radical left. As a matter of fact, in the 1960s, he was one of the founders of what he called the New Left. David will say that today's radical agenda was based on a lot of the work that he did as pretty much an agent of darkness. But thank God, David is testimony for how people's eyes can be opened if we are bold enough to tell the truth. David spent the rest of his life after he learned the truth and absorbed it in his heart, trying to teach others how to fight for freedom. He runs the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He's written this wonderful book called Radical Son that will detail his journey from darkness into the light. And one of the greatest things David gives us actually is a multi-volume study called The Black Book of the American Left. Go to blackbookoftheamericanleft.com and you can order this multi-volume series on the left and their strategies and their history. He can't tell it all in 30 minutes, but you can read all of it. You can study it. You can give it as a Christmas gift. I highly commend it to you, because if we don't know the plans of the enemy, if we don't study to prove ourselves, if we don't study to be able to adequately share truth, then we're really part of the problem. There are answers, and we hope to share them with you this weekend. And to kick off the basis of the problem we're talking about, I ask you to please join me in giving a very warm welcome to a real hero of truth, David Horowitz.
Thank you. First, let me say how thrilled I am that the organizers of this event have devoted it to the left. I've spent 20 years as a voice crying in the wilderness, don't call these people liberals. What are they liberal about except hard drugs, sex, spending other people's money, coddling criminals, and giving aid and comfort to our enemies? They're bigots is what they are. Treat them, describe them, study them as leftists. To me, it's part of what I would call the Trump revolution in the right that a conservative organization is devoted to the left's playbook. We hear a lot about hate these days. Hate is in the news. In fact, there's so much hate in America that everyone says they're against it, including the haters. You want me to name three haters who say they're against hate? Hillary, Elizabeth Warren, Maxine Waters. But I could name hundreds. And of course, their focus, the focus of the left, is on the white supremacists. It's mind-boggling to me that that could be a vibrant word in this day and age, since we defeated white supremacy 60 years ago in this country, or neo-Nazis, and we defeated even longer ago. The neo-Nazi white supremacist right, if you want to call it that, calls a national demonstration, and 500 people show up. And they got permits for their demonstration. If they had intended violence, you think they're going to submit their names on a permit? On the other hand, if the left wants people to go illegally into the streets, create a riot, burn a city down, they'll get thousands and tens of thousands of people. That's where the threat is. So let's begin by stating the obvious. The greatest hate movement in America is the anti-Trump chorus. It began by saying he's unfit to be president. Anna Navarro actually said he's unfit to be human. He's deranged. He's a bully. He's crazy. He's a sexist. He's non-compos mentis, so we should invoke the 25th Amendment and remove him from office. He's a white supremacist. He's a white nationalist. He's a neo-Nazi. He's Mussolini. The last time in our country that an incoming and the Democratic Party is forming a resistance, it's not the function of an opposition party in America or in a democracy to form a resistance. We have a traditional honeymoon for an incoming president because we recognize that campaigns are divisive and that when the campaign is over, we have to come together as a nation until the next election. That's the recourse for people who lost. But the Democratic Party has basically declared war on our government. It's the second time in its history that it's seceding from the Union, in effect. The last time we had an incoming president who was duly elected, who was treated this way, and I don't think actually anybody in the history of the world has been treated as badly as Donald Trump, but the last one was Abraham Lincoln. We are in a civil war situation, what Steve Bannon said last night, that it's war, it is war. And it's war because they make it war, not because we do. So what I want to explain today is why it's a civil war situation and why this hatred is so intense. Right? There was a seminal moment in the debates when Trump turned to the cameras, there were like 50 or 70 million people watching this debate, and said, you have to understand, Hillary has tremendous hate in her heart. Now, the first thing I want to say about that is there's no other Republican who would dare say anything like that. She's a woman. It's so politically incorrect to treat women equally. I mean, she's a vicious politician, but it's politically. And besides, conservatives are well-mannered and civilized. And I always say that I sometimes think I'm sent as a former radical to teach conservatives bad manners. But politics is really, it's a street fight. And, 10% more bad manners, please, would be very, very useful. Why did Trump say that? He said it because of her statement about the basket of deplorables, that her political opponents, that's us, are racist, sexist, homophobes, Islamophobes, you name it. And Trump is raising us up. Well, how many times have you been in any conservative, been in an argument with a so-called liberal who hasn't been called a racist, a sexist, a homophobe, or Islamophobe? The Democratic Party, you have to recognize today, it's a left-wing party, and it's a party of hate. You want to understand the Democratic Party, understand that their candidate would have been Bernie Sanders if crooked Hillary and crooked Debbie Wasserman Schultz and crooked Donna Brazile hadn't fixed the primaries. That's who the Democratic Party is today. It's a left-wing party, and it hates this country. And by that, I mean it hates the basic founding principles of this country, which emphasize individual rights and which say that we will judge people regardless of their origins, their race, their color, their ethnicity, their gender, their sexual orientation. The founders, as this audience knows well, were Protestants and could only have been Protestants. And what they said was, we're all equal in the eyes of God, and therefore government has to treat us equally. Therefore, we disregard our origins. They came from different countries and different, actually, were Protestant sects, and of course there were Catholics as well, and Jews. But we're all judged as individuals. That's what our nation is built in. That's the principle. And the reason that we're in a civil war situation, if you think of the Civil War, why do we have a civil war? Because it was a fundamental conflict of ideas and principles. You can't have a nation half slave and half free. That was the basic thing. Today, the left, the Democratic Party, is at war with the idea of individual freedom, of liberty, of the importance of the individual outside the group. It's a fundamental conflict. How did the Democrats run their campaign? Oh, well, we have to elect a woman because women are oppressed and they're marginal. I mean, it's mind-boggling. They're marginal and vulnerable and oppressed. And how does that pan out? Well, what the big issue for Hillary was the wage gender gap. There is no wage gender gap. According to Hillary, women earn 24 cents less on a dollar than men do for the same work, the same skills, and the same job experience. If that were true, the employer who did that would be taken to court. Because in 1963, a male-dominated Congress enacted the Equal Pay for Equal Work Act. It's illegal to pay women less for the same work, although we know when Hillary comes to paying her staff and the Clinton Foundation women, they disregard the law. And I prove to you in one sentence why it's ridiculous. Because if it were true, then any smart employer would fire all his male employees, hire women, and increase his profits 24%. So we have a fundamental conflict between people who believe the motto of this country, which is e pluribus unum, out of many, one, and people who see racial hierarchies and gender hierarchies wherever they go. Everything in the Democratic campaign was designed to say that Trump, and of course it's all the rest of us, are anti-immigrant, anti-Mexican, anti-black, anti-woman, and so forth. That's what their campaign was about. Where does this come from? There's actually a name for it. We say identity politics. We're always very polite. It's cultural Marxism. That Marx's idea, fundamentally wrong, led to the deaths of 100 million people in the last century, was that the world is divided into oppressors and oppressed. In Marx's mind, that was capitalists and workers. But unfortunately for him and for his followers, workers didn't behave that way. In the 60s, workers were beating us radicals over the heads, the hard hats, if you recall. So the workers never made the revolution. So the left just shifted. And what they did was they made race and gender the same kind of category as the working class. So you hear these phrases, racism, sexism, classism. I mean, how any adult person can, but anyway. So that's the division of the left, this hierarchy, that the world is divided. It's always a zero-sum game. And the left also, because it controls all our universities. Well, not all. I met a gentleman who's the head of a university where this isn't true today, but all the major, particularly the secular schools, but almost every Catholic school, it's all over, is ruled by people who believe in this cultural Marxist idea of the oppression, of oppression. And so, and of course our media. And the reason we have a bad media is because they all went to journalism schools. That's true. In the old days, reporters came out of high school and they reported what they saw. The reason we have a bad judiciary is the law schools. They're terrible. The conservatives have been purged from the faculties and so forth. So the left is, they're terrific at political warfare. So they've got this phrase, it's people of color. Now, people of color, you think everybody of color has the same interests? Of course, people of color are the oppressed. That's the name for the oppressed, people of color. You don't tell that to the, I can't remember who slaughtered whom, but the Tutsis and the Hutus in Rwanda. They have common interests, yeah. People of color. It's not English. Do you ever think about that? We don't say, here's a box of crayons of color, do we? Or here's a television of color. That's the way French people talk. It's not the way Anglo-Saxons talk. It's completely ideological. But what is its purpose? Its purpose is to divide the world into the oppressed and the oppressors. And guess who the oppressors are? White people. This is a racist party, the Democratic Party. A racist party. White people are the evil people. And you want to know why they get such passion? It's because of that. Why do they sympathize? Well, think about it. Let's just think about Mexico. There's two main ethnic groups. There's the descendants of the Spanish conquistadors who slaughtered the indigenous Indians, the oppressors. And then there's the descendants of the indigenous Indians, the survivors, the oppressed. But when they cross the border, whether legally or illegally, they're both people of color, therefore oppressed. Therefore, we have to have special sensitivities to them, give them special privileges. It's a diabolical scheme, you know, as I say, because the media and everybody talks about people of color. It's a racist term, totally racist. Everybody of color has the same interest, and they're all oppressed, and we're the bad guys. This is the situation we're in now, the Democratic Party. How many people have read the Democratic Party platform for 2016? You all need to read the platform. You all need to know who you're fighting. Again, the Democrats, the left, the leftists, and there's no difference in my mind between the way the Democratic Party, and I'm talking about its leaders, talk these days and think that my parents, who were card-carrying members of the Communist Party. By the way, my mother was also a registered Democrat. It says in the Democrat platform, it pledges them to a societal transformation, a revolution. That's what the resistance is about, it's to overthrow the Trump government and what it stands for, which I will come to in a moment. A societal transformation that will end systemic racism and institutional racism. This is as much a fiction as the wage gender gap. There is no institutional racism in America. How could there be? We have laws against it. In 1964 and 65, the Civil Rights Acts were passed and took race out of every institution, made it illegal. And don't tell me the 1,000 left-wing communist judges that Obama appointed wouldn't lend a sympathetic ear if somebody could show they were actually a victim of institutional racism. It's just outlawed. It's that simple. In the Democratic platform, it also says that it's unacceptable, and this is a racist attitude, it's unacceptable that blacks and Latinos, the mean income for blacks and Latinos is whatever it is, 1/10 of whites or 1/20. Well, how many of those Latinos actually have learned to speak English? How many of them are illegal and therefore can't get jobs that are high paying? How many of the blacks come from single parent families where even Obama has said, and it's, you know, just a non-controversial truth, if you're born into a female-headed household, single-parent family, you are 5 or 6 times more likely to be poor. What the Democratic Party wants to do, which is a communist party, is to eliminate individual choice, individual freedom. For the life of me, I can't understand why Republicans do not fight Obamacare as an attack on individual freedom. The government is taking over your health. That's your life. We need a moral crusade on the right. And individual freedom is the banner. That's what it's about. That is the genius of the American idea. So this is I just picked these little things out from the Democratic platform actually says that the disparity is because of racism, like every disparity. Have you noticed how the civil rights movement has become a defense of habitual criminals and predators who prey on black people? I wrote a book recently, which, of course, it didn't get reviewed in any liberal media, but it was a New York Times bestseller, called Big Agenda, President Trump's Plan to Save America. It's really about the left. And there's a chapter. It's called The Achilles Heel of the Democratic Party. And the Achilles Heel of the Democratic Party is it's a racist party. It controls every inner city of size in America, every killing field. Chicago, Detroit, Ferguson, St. Louis, Baltimore, 100% controlled by the Democratic Party and has been for 50 to 100 years. Every failing school in those inner cities is 100% controlled by the Democratic Party, and Republicans are too polite to ever mention it. Too polite. Now, I wanted to... I became a fan of Donald Trump in the first debate, when he got the first so-called question from Megyn Kelly because he was leading in the polls, which was an indictment. And Republicans and conservatives are always being indicted. What does the left do? It just draws up indictments. Why aren't we indicting them? And she said, you said that women were fat slobs, or you call women fat slobs, ugly pigs, whatever. Oh, that was just Rosie O'Donnell. And what won me over, here's a Republican who fights. Here's somebody who doesn't start shuffling and heading for the tall grass. We need fighters. That's why I love Steve Bannon. Too much of a fighter, evidently, even for this White House. But we all have to do it. And this is the hardest thing for conservatives. You have to change your character a little bit. Like I say, I mean, I always feel ambivalent about giving this advice because it's very civilized to be polite, not to embarrass your people who disagree with you too frontally, and so forth. But you can't win this battle without it. And that's the one thing I disagree with what Steve said last night. I think what Trump did with the NFL was brilliant. That is, it was all going away. Kaepernick was not being hired. You know, it was going to just disappear. And, of course, if there's any racial issue, Republicans are, oh, yeah, let's let it go away. It's too much of a minefield. What Trump did by calling out, and I'm a big fan of the Warriors and Steph Curry and everything, but by calling them out, of course, he elevated it. But now he's got a major political conflict, and guess what? He's on the side of the flag and the country, and they're taking the knee for Freddie Gray and Michael Brown, street thugs. Come on. Who's going to win that one? So, as I told Governor Walker, we have to lash out every now and then. It's really important. It's very important to confront them. But here's, for all of his, Donald's faults, and everybody knows them, he stood on the right side of the civil, we are in a civil war against people. Kamala Harris said we have to define what it means, what our country means. We have to define what it is to be an American. This is the only country in the world which was defined in its birth. Other countries are formed, similar language, similar culture, similar ethnicity, geographical contiguousness. but America, as a document, that's how we were founded. We don't have any of those things. We have, it's right there in the Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal and endowed by their creator with rights that can't be taken away. The Democratic Party wants to fundamentally, and we know Obama said it, change the country. They're communists. Believe me, I was born into the left. That's all we thought about, was how to take the country apart and, remake it. And they're racists. I long for the day when a Republican will say to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, how can you belong to a racist party like the one you belong to? They control the inner cities, and everything they do is about race. Everything. They have put race back into every category so that even though it should be illegal under the 14th Amendment and certainly illegal under the Civil Rights Act, if you're the right color, you go to the head of the line for a college admission, to the head of the line for a job, to the head of the line for a promotion, and on and on and on and on. We are pretty much a society where there's large elements of racism, and it all comes from the left. Stop being so polite. This is what Trump said. Trump instinctively, the thing you know about Trump, look, here's a guy who loves his reputation, puts his name on everything he does, and he gave it all up. He's made himself the most vilified human being in human history because he loves his country, and he is very American in this. This was his much maligned inaugural. And don't you like the brazen Democrats? He talked about the carnage in the inner cities, and they said, that's running down the inner cities. That's racist. Of course, they prefer to have black people killing each other all the time. Anyway, he referred to those Americans in his inaugural who had been left behind. He said, we are one nation, and their pain is our pain. Their dreams are our dreams, and their success will be our success. We share one heart, one home, one glorious destiny. The oath of office I take today is an oath of allegiance to all Americans. And then he said, through our loyalty to our country, we will rediscover our loyalty to each other. When you open your heart to patriotism, there's no room for prejudice. It's time to remember the old wisdom of our soldiers, that whether we are black or brown or white, we all bleed the same red blood of patriots. And the Democratic Party is saying patriotism is white nationalism. How evil is that? And it has to be fought that way. We all enjoy, said Trump, the same glorious freedoms, and we all salute the same great American flag. And whether a child is born in the urban sprawl of Detroit or the windswept plains of Nebraska, they look up at the same night sky, they fill their heart with the same dreams, and they are infused with the breath of life by the same almighty creator. This is a man we can get behind. This is the standard bearer for us in this war. And I will say, as I and since the second half of my life has been an atonement for the first half, I take pride in the fact that the man who wrote those words, Stephen Miller, is a protege of mine who I've worked with since he was in high school. Thank you.
Don't forget to order this series. I don't know where else you're going to turn to get the whole history of the left and the radical agenda by somebody who lived it and breathed it than David's work. So please, you can find his bio in the notebook if you didn't take notes on the names of his books, and you'll be able to order those materials so you can become better informed on that and use them to share with others.